Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. As 2018 has just dawned, a new year full of promise and anticipation, we might be asking, what are some of the hopes for the disability community? What were some of the successes of the previous year? So, looking ahead at the success and what could be of her yoga program, here's our first guest, Nicole Daniel. So as you look ahead to the yoga program for 2018, what are your biggest hopes?
My hopes are that more and more people find out about it and have the courage and interest to come and try it. I think, as we've spoken about on previous programs, I think starting yoga for anybody, whether you're able-bodied or have a disability, I think starting yoga is just such an enormous shift in your life that it takes a lot of courage and strength and energy to even get that going. So I hope that people come and try it out. I would love to keep building these classes.
So, for a person with a disability who might be hesitant to try it in the first place, what might you suggest could be some of the benefits?
I would let them know that if they can breathe, if they have a set of lungs, they can do these classes. Despite whatever their limitations might be, through my years of practice and exploration with so many people, I can really truly help them expand lung capacity, clear their minds, start to soften the areas that are really tense, and lengthen areas that are shortened and resistant. And it might take having an assistant. It might be in one of the assisted classes, or it might be in an independent class. But there is something for everyone. As I said, as long as you've got a set of lungs, we can get that diaphragm going through very simple, very effective techniques, and get some sound going in throats for maybe people who have a lot of vocal restriction. Words are starting to come out more clearly. The throat starts to get stronger. Expression becomes easier. It doesn't have to be all these big movements. And it's wonderful when we can make some movements happen and we take our slow, slow time with those kinds of things. But it all starts with getting the chest open, getting the throat clear, getting the face nice and bright. So many exercises for the eyes, the ears, the nose, getting them open so our senses can really tune into life. We see better, we hear better, we listen, we taste more clearly, we can smell things when those spaces in our face are open. And that's what a lot of yoga starts with, is cleaning and opening up the face. And everyone can do that. So I'm excited about those subtle aspects of yoga that might just really help those people, like I said, who might not have the greatest mobility, but over time, and especially with assistance, those mobility issues can be addressed as well.
So in the 2017 season of yoga, specifically the adapted program, were there any challenges that you faced in developing techniques for those with disabilities?
Challenges, you know, as we've talked about before, I mean, I live for them. I think that's what's drawn me into this type of teaching yoga, working with people who have challenges. I love the challenges. I love meeting the people who think, I can never do this, I can't do that, my body doesn't do that, I'm not capable, or, you know, if it's someone who, you know, is being assisted, that attitude of, she can't do this, he'll never understand that, he doesn't know what you're saying. Those kinds of things are definitely limitations to hear. I hear those kinds of things somewhat often, people's ideas of their limitations. But I, as the teacher, love those challenges. I love the quirky, twisted spines like my own, like my scoliosis. It's just very inspiring to have just that slight oddity in your spine or something that just doesn't move quite right, one toe that doesn't obey your messages like all the other toes do. I love those little quirky challenges because that to me is, you know, a starting point. Okay, so that toe isn't behaving correctly. Let's really look at the toes. Let's really see if we can get them all stretching and moving. I love the challenges. So the word challenge excites me. It gives me a great foundation to start a practice on, and I think that's what my program is all about, is facing those challenges and working with them. I'm excited. Challenges keep me very entertained as a teacher.
So was there any success of 2017 that you hope to build on in 2018?
The continued participation of my long-term students. You know, some of the programs that are now going to be entering into their sixth year now in 2018, some that started in 2012, and the same faces and the same people, the same energy, the same love for it, increased love for it. My Saturday morning class, my 11:15 adapted yoga, one of the things I love the most is seeing the group of parents outside as they chit-chat away while I'm with the students inside the room. I can see the parents outside, and there's just such a lovely community being built. And that's just exciting to see, too, you know, how the relationships that we start to build inside the yoga studio, they expand out. People are coming together, meeting. I just love that. I love that there's just a continuation of all of this good stuff we've been doing, and there doesn't seem to be any slowing down. Everybody is excited to get back to it in the new year. We've had a little break now over the holiday. Happy New Year to you and your listeners, by the way.
And to you.
Thank you. And just very excited to keep things rolling, to keep building the assisted yoga program. That's a little bit of a newer class, and that's one that I hope maybe, you know, caregivers and parents and siblings and friends consider maybe bringing someone to in order to experience what assisted yoga is like.
So in terms of getting the word out, this past year you spoke at Accessibility Awareness Day and educated some local students and interested parties about modified yoga. You think you'll do anything similar for the year ahead?
You mean in terms of speaking at a big thing like that?
Yes.
I would love to. I'm very grateful to, you know, be employed at the university for other aspects of my work. And they're very aware, especially in the human kinetics department, they're very aware of my work with special needs and modified and assisted yoga. Through that human kinetics building that I was asked to attend that, to speak at that Accessibility Awareness Day. And just, you know, as those programs at that department build, because there's really an emphasis in the human kinetics building to be creating accessible programs. And so, as you know, we're all kind of really excited about all these opportunities. So they're aware of what I do. I'm so interested in pursuing what I'm working on. And hopefully, as those opportunities arise, I do get asked again. It was a wonderful thing. I was just, in fact, earlier today looking at my leaflet from that day. I glanced at it, and the nice signature there from Temple Grandin. It was so neat to meet her. It was a great day.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you, Cam. Thank you, as always.
Of course. I wanted specifically to make mention of Accessibility Awareness Day as one of Nicole's successes. It's one that she and I actually share, in a way. One of the greatest privileges in the 10 years so far I've been doing the show was actually speaking at that event myself. But I quickly came to realize it wasn't about my presentation. It was about the amazing stories, the people who have the courage to speak and just to say, people with disabilities are our equals. They are human beings with things to contribute, and strength and dignity. Hearing those, going through, just highlighting the success moments at that time, really affected me, you know? It reminded me that no matter how the world might have seemed at one point, there's always that little spark of life and light. Because when a person with a disability is told something is impossible, and they go out and do it, that's not necessarily meant to be inspirational. It's just proof that the human factor will win out over the medical baseline every single time. With hope and faith and respect, a person with a disability can and will achieve. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey, I'm Emerson.
And I'm Farah. We are your hosts for the new program, No Scrubs.
Our show will include various issues and concerns, controversial topics, and interviews with professionals about health and wellness.
Check out the nursing radio program, No Scrubs, on CJAM 99.1 FM. Listen live on Tuesdays at 1200. If you miss the show, or if you can't get enough, catch it again on Wednesdays at 1630. You can listen to the live shows or archives online at www.cjam.ca.
While you're at it, like our page and hit us up on www.facebook.com/CJAMNoScrubs. We want to hear from you. Email your health questions and stories to nursingcjam@gmail.com and they may be read anonymously on the air.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from our friend, Nicole Daigneault. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley, who will be telling us about his hopes for 2018 disability employment incentives. So tell me a little bit about some of the successes with the Mayor's Challenge of 2017.
Well, it has been more of a struggle in 2017, as we've been successful in the past with the Mayor's Challenge on student employment, particularly in places like Sarnia, which was leading the whole country in student employment. But trying to move into the area of more employment on a full-time basis for those with disabilities or challenge has been a much bigger struggle, trying to deal with the bureaucracies, trying to deal with the economy, and some of the other things that have an impact on hiring.
So what specific areas are you hoping to focus on for the year ahead to cut through all the red tape?
Well, I think that really the focus has to be on municipalities taking a leadership role. In many communities, they're one of the largest employers, and when they say that they have people who are disabled on their staff, often those people, the disability happened after they became employees. You can't lead a community and say that private sector and other public sector groups should be hiring people with disabilities when municipalities aren't doing it themselves. I think there needs to be much more focus on the value of that workforce, and then that workforce is within their own communities, trained, skilled, educated, and is ready to go.
So, do you find there's any tendency towards tokenism in terms of those who do employ people with disabilities, that they're doing this work, but it's not like core essential?
Well, I think there's exceptions to the rule, but I think in general, and I just did an interview with a municipal magazine the other day making that point that there is a lot of lip service. People raise flags and issue proclamations and talk about being inclusive and talk about being an inclusive community. Well, if you're disregarding the employment needs of 30 or 40% of your population, which is only going to grow in the years ahead, then you're not really inclusive. And that applies to my own city in Sarnia, too, that it's been a struggle to get people to realize there's a trained, educated workforce within our community who is ready to go to work if given the opportunity. So it takes creative thinking. It takes creative leadership, not just at the elected level, because we don't control the direct hiring in cities, but at the administrative level that says, we're going to be different. We're going to try to make this happen.
So if there's sort of a downturn in disability employment, that could drive up things such as over-reliance on the welfare system, which ultimately would hurt the economy province-wide.
Well, that's true. The reality is we don't know what the minimum wage increases will do to the economy and to employment. There's all sorts of speculation that it'll just flow through and it'll be a great benefit, and others predicting 50,000 job losses. Well, the service sector has been one of the key areas that disability employment has focused on, because they do need a constant workforce and there is a lot of turnover. So we don't know if that's going to have a dramatic impact on hiring, which in turn, because usually the biggest challenge is getting people with disabilities hired, in getting more employment and keeping the employment there now. I think we really need to wait and see, because often these forecasts are over dramatic, but that is the one issue in 2018 that may have a significant impact on people with disabilities in the service sector keeping and retaining their employment.
So, are there any projects on the horizon or any concepts that you have that can help with some of these issues for the year ahead?
Well, one of the groups, the Champions Group that I've worked with for 10 years, we're a small group. We were put together by David Onley, the former Lieutenant Governor. Last year or two, we've been advocating quite strongly for the end of sheltered workshops. That's moving forward. Now the key is to make sure that there's a transition that is acceptable to communities and, more importantly, to those who are employed there. That's a big issue for us in 2018, 2019, as that legislation and moves forward. There's a provincial election. I think there needs to be a real focus to the party leaders, trying to get them to respond on disability issues. And when they do, we find over time that the commitments made aren't honored. So there's a number of things this year that will be, I think, highly visible. And my own sense is within the disability community and the advocates like myself is particularly that we're a little tired of the rhetoric. We're a little tired of the pats on the back saying, oh, yes, we support you. And if you look at the Ontario government's record on implementing their own legislation, they have failed at every point to get that legislation implemented on the timelines they said they would. So I think you'll see a lot more vocal efforts to get the focus on people with disabilities, whose unemployment rate has always been much higher than any other sector of the economy, and that is not acceptable.
So when you say there's been a failure in terms of the implementation, are you referring to the AODA Act and the upgrades that should be in place? Or
yes, and that has been consistent on the failure to meet their own deadlines. And that, in turn, sends a message to the business community that you really don't have to worry about this legislation, because they tend to back off or they don't implement what is in their own legislation. And I don't like the punitive approach, but the fact is sometimes that you need to move forward and make decisions and enact laws that will bring about some dramatic changes in disability employment and disability access to communities.
Might actually be this mindset among people with disabilities that they shouldn't apply for a job necessarily because they're not going to get it, there won't be accommodations in place, et cetera, et cetera. So they're creating their own hesitation in a manner of speaking, I think.
And I think that's quite understandable, especially if you've been rejected repeatedly, that you're feeling that, you know, why even bother? And then the alternative becomes social assistance. I mean, the other thing that's supposed to unfold the next 2 years, which I wish was happening sooner, is looking at a guaranteed annual income so that everyone in this province would have a certain level of income that would give them a reasonable lifestyle to function as a citizen. And then, you know, I think there'd be a much better ability to try to get people to back into the workforce if they choose to do so. And where this has been experimented with elsewhere, that's exactly what's happened. When people can live a reasonable life, they want more opportunity and they want to add to that life. So that, I hope, will happen in the next couple of years. There's three pilot projects underway or about to be underway. To me, it's going to take a long time, but if it works, and it has worked elsewhere, it could be a great change in how we, as Canadians, treat our fellow citizens.
So if you could send any one message about the need to get people with disabilities back to work and what we can do better, what would you say?
Well, I would think, you know, one of the things about the Mayor's Challenge the second time around was to make it's the smart thing to do. It's the business case. And not to accept charity or patronization. And I know it's easy for me to say as someone who doesn't have a disability, but the fact is that there needs to be stronger voices. And there are strong voices out there, but there's always been a sense that we've rocked the boat. And I'm talking about within government, within the private sector, then they'll just ignore us, and they can because the pressure's not there otherwise. But the reality is, if you think about it, down the road with in my own community, we're facing a skills training shortage in the years ahead. There is a workforce here, and they need to be vocal about their skills and their advocacy and not to you know, act like it's charity, to have gainful employment that can actually boost a corporation and add to its bottom line, not the other way around.
So when you say there are strong vocal presences, can you give me an example of some of the success that has been achieved through advocacy?
Well, I think David Lipowski and his advocacy, I mean, for the fact that every transit system in this province now has a call-out system so you know each stop and each address and street, he had to force the government into that through the courts, through the Human Rights Commission. That took courage. And he continues to be a very vocal advocate and holding the government accountable on issues. He tends to get marginalized, as does any voice that's not part of the status quo. But I think there needs to be more of that. To me, this has always been a civil rights issue. That's how I got involved. I saw it as a civil rights issue. That's what needs to be pushed with government. They turn around and they respond to every other pressure that comes along. They need to think about their responsibility to those within their own community and across this province and across this country. And that is a civil rights issue, that employment should be something that's there that people can access and not be held with prejudice against them because of a disability.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if
you
can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Mayor Bradley was absolutely right in that this is a civil rights issue, in so much as, historically, no group has ever made progress without saying, we need to do better. We're part of this community, too, and we need to be included. The disabilities credo, nothing about us without us, is one of my favorite sayings. So much as, yeah, there is a tendency towards tokenism, doing these things to make us as a society feel better, saying, oh, we gave the little paralyzed boy a ramp so he can get into school. That's not something you should go out of your way to do. That should simply be included as part of the equation. Or, as my favorite example goes, those signs that say blind person's crossing, put some braille on them for criminy's sake. Fact is, it's not about what we do to make ourselves feel better. It is about making real change, real impact. To us, yeah, having the wheelchair button on the door is a matter of convenience. But for somebody who needs it, when it comes down to being able to get into a building or not being able to get into a building, That's a question of equality, and it is a question of civil rights. Fact is, we have to think beyond ourselves, beyond what's easy for us. Change may be slow, but it's necessary. In terms of tokenism, you don't want to create a situation where a person with a disability doesn't even try for a job, or they say, oh, it'll be easier to go on the welfare system simply because I know going in that I won't have a fair chance. Nothing is so damaging to a person with a disability as that mentality that says, the deck is stacked against me, so why should I even try? That's where a person misses out on real opportunities. Comes down to the man who accepts the doctor who says he'll never walk again without getting up and trying it on his own. You can accept that, yes, that is your choice. Or you can see for yourself whether it works or it does not. Sometimes you do have to take that chance. You have to get out of the boat, so to speak. Get into a place where you say, I'm an intelligent, capable person, and applying for this job would be in their own best interest to hire me. Not because it's good for the public image, not because I would be just another face in the crowd, but because I am a thinking, strong, capable human being, and I have something to offer. And honestly, any workforce should include people with disabilities, people of different cultural backgrounds. You can talk about embracing diversity all you want, but if somebody actually looks into these matters, if they ask the question, do you really go beyond just a legal token, or do you really care that there are more types of people in the world than just those that you're familiar with or those you're comfortable with? When it comes to creating meaningless opportunities, one of the greatest pieces of wisdom I've ever heard in my life goes, and I quote, "Don't break your arm patting yourself on the back." In other words, yeah, you can do things to say, hey, ain't we great? We're so supportive of this community. But in 10 years, when you've only met the minimum requirement and the welfare rates have gone through the roof, people with disabilities have yet to speak for their own rights, what have we really accomplished by just doing what we have to? But if we go beyond it, if we create meaningful employment opportunities, meaningful access, equality, things like municipal voting for people with vision impairments, doing it electronically, they can't easily just go home and read what's on the website. If they have a screen reader, yeah, that's fine. That's great. They can afford to do that. But for those who don't have it, are we really going to put equality on the basis of what you can afford? Really? The rights of a human being, the right to access, need not be limited by a person's income. It should simply be a consideration. And can we grow into a place where we can provide, if not perfect equality, at least as close to it as we can get? Can we think outside our own shadows and create new year filled with economic growth and real opportunity for people with disabilities, for the able-bodied, regardless of cultural background, education, no matter where they're coming from? Can we make this a year where real change is embraced? That's not a question I can answer. That's one that we must each look to our own hearts to. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.